Okay, welcome. This is Carol Corsi. I am the author of Save Your Inner Tortoise and a very passionate learner and now teacher of this idea of emotional agility. And for those of you who are listening to this recording, one of the recommendations that I'm making, actually I'm making that to those who are live as well today, is that you, as best to your ability, engage in the conversation, engage in the learning, so that this isn't an intellectual exercise for you. It's actually has some long-lasting benefits afterwards, because that truly is my intention, is that all of us get better and better at this idea of being more emotionally agile, more actively able to bring those emotions and ways of feeling and doing in life than we prefer. And the topic that I picked for today, and this is totally self-serving because I'm in the midst of fear and dread and self-doubt, et cetera, and I thought that some of you guys might also be familiar with that, hopefully so, or at least enough to play. But my goal is that we devise some strategies and simple practices for spending less time in fear. And the technique or the origins of this idea that we can actually change our emotions, we're not stuck with them, I originally got from two PhDs by the name of Ekman and Davidson. And Paul Ekman is quite famous for his work on connecting the body, especially faces, with emotions. But I wanted to read something from my book on activating emotions, which is what we're going to play with today. And here's what they said in the book. In the course of our research, we found something that surprised us. If you intentionally make a facial expression, you change your physiology. By making the correct expression, you begin to have changes in your physiology that accompany the emotion. The face is not simply a means of display, but also a means of activating emotion. Here's the cool part. This is strictly voluntary, but these expressions, these new facial expressions, and what we're going to expand to it in it today is also posture and shoulders, et cetera, and breathing patterns. But they say this is strictly voluntary, so the changing of the expression is voluntary, but the expressions turn on the involuntary system. In other words, simply putting the face into a smile drives the brain to activity typical of happiness, just as a frown does with sadness. And so I thought we would actually test this theory out. So we're going to test it out together today, and then and we're going to use the three steps that I have in the book. But then we're also going to invite you to activate an emotion that you actually would prefer to maybe spend this week in. This is a Monday. So the rest of this week, if there is an emotion that you would prefer that would be helpful given what's ahead of you in life here. That's where we're going to play today. So for those listening on the recording, I want to let you know that this is one of the free monthly calls that I do. And I invite anybody who wants to learn a little bit more about emotional agility, or for people who've either read the work or done some of my teleclass series or work with me as a coach, to actually improve your skills with emotional agility. And by improving those skills, what happens is you like your life more. So this requires you engaging. So if you're listening, play as if you're live and do what we do. And for those live on the call that want to play out loud, I welcome you to do so. So here, I want to give you a little bit of context about this idea of activating emotions beyond the quote I just read. If you're at anything like me, you sometimes feel you cannot influence your emotions. When fear or anger or dread or self-doubt or anxiety arise, they seem to have a mind and life of their own. And sometimes we feel hijacked by these emotions. So hijacked that we feel like life will never change. There's nothing I can do. This is going to last forever. Am I speaking to the choir here? Anybody feel familiar? Or am I all by myself with this one? Okay, good. I heard a giggle.
Not all by yourself.
Yeah, thank you. Here's the kicker. The same hijacking is true when we're in joy and satisfaction and they overtake us. We're having a really good day. But here's what's interesting. We don't tend to call that being hijacked because we like it. And we tend not to want to change them. So it's usually these, as the Dalai Lama and Daniel Goleman call them, destructive emotions. They have a wonderful book called Destructive Emotions. So that's what I'm going to play with today, is a very popular and frequent emotion that I hear from in myself lately, because I'm up to big things these days. But I also hear it in a lot of my clients, and that's fear. And this common emotion has lots of cousins, or emotional cousins that I call them. So fear includes anxiety, dread, a sense of insufficiency, worry, fretting, angst, regrets about the past that then you awfulize and think the future is going to be the same, and it will continue to be the same. And my current personal favorite is self-doubt. So what we're going to do with this sense of fear is, like I said earlier, there are going to be three steps. First of all, the awareness of fear and the desire, increasing the desire to leave it behind. So we're going to, in a very true sense for each of us, is we're going to enter some version of fear. Now, don't worry, because we're going to exit it too. But emotional agility has the idea that we enter and exit emotions. We can get into them, we can get out of them. And that's what I want to do today, is to increase your trust of being able to enter and learn from emotions, and then exit it if it's the wrong emotion for what you want to have in your life. Step two is where we decide what we want a bit more of. What other emotion is a bit more appealing? And we're going to work with this idea that I present in step two of the book, with this idea of the opposite. What's the opposite of fear? What's the opposite of dread? What's the opposite of self-doubt? What's the opposite of fretting? Because in order to bring something new, we can't wait for it to change, because the waiting increases our skill in fear. The more time you spend in fear, the better you get at it. So step two is all about creating a contrasting emotion. And this is where you step up to the plate and say, here's what I'd like instead. And then step three is, how are we going to keep it going? And I've got some tricks here, and I suspect each of you have some tricks here. So any questions before we start step one, two, and three? And I definitely want to make sure that you feel free to ask questions at any time, because that's part of how we learn. So anything before we get started?
So, Carol, when you say you're focused on fear, for us, as we're kind of doing our work around this exercise, do we use that as our framework word, or do we pick how it seems to be expressing itself right now?
I would pick, thank, great question. I would pick how fear is expressing itself in you at this particular moment. Use your own language. I'll help you along if you need it, but if you don't need it, if you don't need my help, just go for it for yourself.
Okay, good.
And pick a word or two, you know, something that allows you to enter, honestly enter, your version of fear. Cool, thanks. Any other questions?
No.
Okay, good. So step one is to activate some version of fear. What are you worried about, not looking forward to, afraid of, a little unhappy with yourself about, or possibly unhappy with someone else, but I don't want you to focus on them, I want you to focus on what happens to you. And the one that's been firing up in me is dread. And so the next question I'm going to ask you is, what happens to your physiology? Remember in the quote from Ekman and Davidson that they say when you activate an emotion, the physiology changes. So what happened to your face, your posture, or what happens to your jaw, your forehead, when you enter your emotion? So what happens for me, and then I'm going to ask you whoever wants to play here, what happens to you? My body tends to, the first thing I notice was my jaw starts to, I start gritting my teeth. And then this furrow that I have in my forehead, I get these two big wrinkles in my forehead. And I feel a certain tightness in my skin. And I actually grow shorter. My spine isn't tall and erect. I actually kind of shrink down. I slump a bit. So what are you noticing as you enter your version of fear or dread or self-doubt? What are you noticing in your physiology, your posture, your shoulders, your face, your eyes, your cheeks? What are you noticing?
Well, for me, I notice my breathing gets shallow.
Mm.
I get this, the version I'm dealing with is like combo anxiety, worry, fret. It's kind of like soup,
mm-hmm.
right? And my stomach has that queasy feeling. I'll call it queasy feeling.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of awareness about my specifics of my body, but I know I feel contracted versus expanded. Like there's a hunkering down, and the chain of thoughts that go with it just carry me off into, you know, they just start racing.
Well, let's go to that chain of thoughts, because one of the other things that comes with emotions and the body is language.
Mm-hmm.
What do you always say to yourself? What's that little mantra?
Well, it's associated with something's not going to turn out how I want it to.
Mm-hmm. So it won't turn out?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it as a specific mantra, but that's, yeah, I think that's probably a good one.
Yeah, it's a thing.
Suppose I can get to it at this moment.
Yeah. Mine is, I can't, I just can't. I'm a fraud, I'm not good enough, really, I'm really not good enough. It won't work. And then what I do is I call myself a procrastinator.
So right?
I characterize myself, and then I believe it. And then I behave that way. And that's how you activate and sustain an emotion. So you have a body that's familiar. And when you said that your stomach got queasy, I got a little nauseous too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It what I noticed is yesterday I got to lead the meeting, the annual meeting that I'm board of directors of. So there was a lot of anxiety with it. It's interesting, you know, dread is kind of part of that. Dread's not always for a part of the anxiety, worry, fretting. It's because there's many things I don't. Rarely do I dread anything these days, but I guess it's just that anxious feeling and the queasy stomach. And, you know, then I have this conversation with myself that I know that it's going to go away once I get started. You know what I mean? You know, so it's kind of like that, trying to talk myself out of.
How does that work?
Well, sometimes it's okay, but I always notice that, you know, I'll also tell myself to take deep breaths because, you know, it's like the things, like you said, we already have tricks that we use. So I know that just telling myself, you know, that I've been through this before, it does work out, you can be confident. Sometimes and then one of the things that happens with my fear thing is I do what I call over-prepare. And the last couple times, yesterday's meeting even, and one related to work, I resisted the temptation to do that. And it was all good. You know, it did turn out. And I can't remember why, but it was something, you know, you and I had talked about, or something in a conversation that I had with you at some moment where I thought, you know, I don't need to do this level of preparation because it's in a mood of anxiety that the preparation is taking place. Like I'm really doing it for the sake of, like, making the anxiety stop.
Yep.
And the preparation I do is useful. But, like, the extra anxiety, like that, I guess I would like to be able to prepare and do things in a different emotion. Like, why does it have to be anxiety that I prepare for these things that I actually love to do?
Yep.
I love more the outcome than the, you know, the piece in between, but I think that's partially because of the anxiety that's in there. It's like, like, what's the possibility of, like, can I just prepare in a different mood?
Yes,
why does it need to be anxiety, worry, and fret? which interrupts my sleep and, you know, all the stuff that
with
it.
And what I'm discovering is that is possible, but not without intention and practice.
Yeah.
And the intention to do it differently has to be followed up with actions. One of the things I discovered about activating an emotion is that you have to activate it.
Yeah.
So that's why I created these steps, because I wanted to give people a really simple exercise to begin, one, trusting they can enter an emotion like we are right now in entering the emotion of fear, some version of fear, dread, self-doubt, whatever it is, anxiety, fretting, nervousness, panic, anxiety, you know, that sort of stuff, that we can let ourselves fall into it and keep track of it and become well aware of what we always say and what we always do. And what I have in the book is an exercise to actually have people write down what we're traveling through in today's teleclass. Because writing it down, like specifically writing down and noticing the language that you use, you know, mine's that I can't, I just can't, I'm a frickin' fraud, I'm not good enough really. It just won't work. No matter what I do, this will never change. And so I convince myself in language, my body follows suit, I get contracted just like you do. And that's exactly what perpetuates the emotion. So the pattern of an emotion is what keeps us there. The trick to activating another emotion, one we like a little bit better, is to activate a different pattern. So I want to ask one more question here so that we stay in the awareness of the fear. What future, and I'll ask you, each of you, what future does this version of fear predict for you?
I'm not sure if this is answering the question, but let me take a crack at it.
Sure.
As I was listening to you all, since much of it sounded really familiar, the thing that kept coming up for me, because when fear kind of grabs me, sometimes it's in the middle of the night, and you know, something wakes you up, and then your brain starts going. And I try all these, you know, smart techniques that I've learned to kind of stop it.
Would you speak up just a little bit more? I'm losing
you.
Yeah,
I said I try all these techniques that I've learned to try to stop the fear and let myself go back to sleep, because I also then get pissed off that I'm not sleeping.
Yes.
But
I've got the same thing going on.
Yeah.
So we're right on the same bus here.
Me
but,
too.
But then what starts happening is I start, you know, deep breathing, or I try a mantra, you know, that kind of stuff. And then there's this part of me that says, you're just running away from it. You're not being responsible. There's something about being in a fearful place that calls up for me that I own it and I have to conquer it, rather than I could just move to a different place. You know, is this making sense?
Yep.
And so this part of me that thinks I have to own it and conquer it, I think is part of why I don't move out of it.
Yeah. Well, here's my thought. I think there are two separate moves here, owning it and conquering it. I think owning it and just recognizing that this is where I am,
yeah,
with a certain amount of acceptance, what I think paralyzes it is this idea of conquering, like I have to conquer it. It's not okay for me to not sleep. So the resistance to the emotion actually perpetuates the emotion.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been seeing with my own version of dread. And I never honestly believed in this idea of acceptance because I thought it was somehow demeaning or lazy or I've been doing some meditation practices, and it's a guided meditation that I downloaded from this guy by the name of neuroscientist by the name of Joe Dispenza. And he's got this wonderful book. It's called Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. And I think my book is to introduce the idea of emotional agility. I think his book is when you really want to tackle something that's been troubling you for a long, long time.
Hmm.
Because his is a... He takes the idea of practicing into, like, turbo drive. And
wow.
So I meditate for over an hour every morning. And this is the first time in my life that I've taken changing something profoundly troubling to me seriously enough to actually do something about it. And so I'm actually quite proud of the work that I did in my book because I think it's a precursor to what he makes available.
Hmm.
And it's the same stuff because what he does is he has you do what I'm doing with you guys. What's the body? What's the flavor of it? What's the breathing pattern? What's the language? And what we're going to do now, instead of conquering it, give ourselves a bit of a grace period and, like, accept that this is what is arising in me, so be it. And if you have a desire for a different future, what emotion is more appealing? What would you like? What's the opposite of your version of fear? Like, mine can be openness, flexibility, playfulness, irreverence, indignance. I actually went through indignance after my meditation yesterday. It was like, wait a minute, how dare they? And that was kind of a surprise to me because I thought the opposite of fear would be happiness, some version of happiness.
Mm.
But yesterday, what felt right was indignance. This morning, what felt right was boldness, doing something anyway. Because I, just as you said earlier, Carla, about, gee, I'd like to do my preparation in a different emotion. Well, after my meditation this morning, I was doing my notes for this call, and I noticed the not good enough was coming up again. And I'm going, you know, I'm just a little tired of that. I want to bring what I feel, what I felt in my meditation this morning to the preparation. And that was a certain sense of freedom and fun and playfulness. So what's my body of playfulness? So I actually walked around the office, wrote some notes, a little hard to write while you're walking around, but I felt better in the emotion of like openness and playfulness if I walked around a little bit. I put my papers down and danced around a little bit, danced around the office, went up and down the stairs a couple of times with a big smile on my face, came back, sat down, finished my notes, noticed it was getting like 20 minutes. It's like, oh my God, I'm not going to finish this. And I thought, stop, change that. I'm going to finish. I know this stuff upside down, inside out, and backwards. The notes are here simply to help me stay on time. So there was no conquering there. So for each of you, if you were to pick an emotion that's a bit more appealing, or just what would you like a bit more of instead of not conquering it, but simply if you were to activate an emotion that would be kind of fun, what emotion would you pick? What might help is if you change your posture to the opposite posture of what you were in fear. So what I had to do was I had to sit up straighter and grow taller. I actually had to loosen my jaw, open my mouth, and open my eyes a bit wider. Not too wide, because fear has taking a gasp in. Now, this is what I call sweet eyes. They're not squinting, but they're a little more open. And activate, put a slight smile on your face. Does the changing of your body affect the emotion that you were in? And be truthful here. I'm not trying to, this has to work for you.
I don't know that I know what emotion to tag it with, but I think for me what's coming up is more openness, more trusting, more allowing.
And let your body follow suit. Open your shoulders. Maybe increase the distance between the parts of your spine. Like actually grow a bit taller so that your shoulders, your heart can come out. Your lungs actually have more space to breathe.
Yeah, what I noticed, Carol, is it was kind of a nanosecond that I identified the confidence, and then I added trust to it, what I wanted instead. And it's like the moment I said the word confidence to myself, I sat up in my chair, and then you started talking about doing that, and then that helped take me there, plus trust is what showed up then.
Wow. Yep.
You know, like trusting the process, trusting
yourself.
Yeah, trusting myself and the process, because these are organizational, you know, interactions that I'm doing with. So
mm-hmm.
not just trusting myself, but trusting the other human beings.
Oh, wow.
Going through the process, right?
Yeah.
And,
So I want to do a trick here. I want you to go back to the body of fear, the language of fear. Just go back to where you went. So back, contraction, feeling small, distrusting, closed, anxiety, whatever that, like I'm now really slumping over in my chair, jeez. And then do the opposite. Sit up, extend your spine, open your shoulders, take a deep breath or two. That two-step process is emotional agility in action. The body that is collapsed and contracted, as Davidson and Ekman say, activate some version of sadness, fear, doubt, lack of confidence. It is the body that goes with the emotion. The body that goes with openness, boldness, is very similar. In order to be open, your posture has to be more upright, because smiling when you're all slumped over and contracted just doesn't fit. It's like incongruent. Well, that's our innate sense of emotional agility telling us what's actually so. It doesn't match. A frown and happiness. Try to be happy with a big frown on your face and gritting your teeth. It's impossible. Open your mouth. Let a sweet smile. Raise the outside edges of your mouth. Raise the outside edges of your eyes. Open your eyes a little bit. Loosen your jaw and try to be unhappy. It feels a little odd.
I'm also struck that when I'm
speak
in
up just
kind
a little bit
rounded, compressed place.
Yes.
My vision, it isn't actually my eyesight, but my vision is compressed too. And
yes.
When I open up, my vision sees much more. I hate to use the word possibility, but.
Well, this is why the body is such a nice trick to fool ourselves into a different emotion. One of the things my studies revealed is that, some of the brain scientists I've been reading, is that our brain does not know the difference between reality and imagination. So emotional agility, the trick that I'm using for emotional agility, is fake it till you make it. And if you walk around proud, upright, like a strong oak tree that can't be blown over, that's how you can extend this sense of well-being, dignity, strength. And when fearful things happen to you, they don't last as long.
Yeah.
So now that brings us to step number 3. How are you going to take, well, first of all, you have a choice of which emotion you're going to take into the rest of today. You honestly have a choice. If you put yourself in the posture of your version of fear and self-doubt and anxiety and fretting, just like the three of us can easily stay up all night worrying, that's because we're worrying. And we're thinking that we should be getting more sleep. I mean, I had a restless night last night, didn't sleep well the whole night. And at one point it was like, gee, if I didn't worry about, it's like I'm not going to die if I don't sleep tonight. Really, not going to die. Been getting pretty good sleep the last few days. So I just relaxed and just, it's like, okay, mind, go where you are. I didn't try to conquer it or fix it. I practiced accepting it. And I got some but not much sleep last night. So what?
You know,
I'll take a nap later.
Yeah, one of the things I've been tinkering with and toying with is, you know, when I do that anxiety, fear, worry thing in the night is when it's biggest or when I wake up, just like you guys. But what I notice is, you know, then I have this negative assessment of myself that I'm doing that.
Yes.
And when I change that, you know, every once in a while I kind of think, well, what am I trying to tell myself here? Because, you know, instead of seeing it as a bad thing, like, well, what if there's, you know, some really good information that I'm, you know, bringing out here?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it does happen.
Yes, it does.
So then it's kind of like, you know, and it might lead me to think of something that I actually want to do. And then, so I'll write it down, and then I'll thank myself, and then see if I
yes.
can get back to sleep.
Yes.
I mean, I haven't tried that a lot, but it's kind of like a new thing. It's like, why do I have to turn this worry, anxiety, fretting thing into yet another bad thing on top of it?
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah,
yep.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, but I notice I have a fear that if I don't do anxiety, worry, and fret, I won't get done the preparation I need to do.
Yes.
So that's kind of like your procrastination thing in a
yep.
way.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's how we
keep ourselves
there, and yeah. in a way, that's how we justify it.
Yeah. If I don't do this, then I'm not going to.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll for sure not get what I want because
yeah.
I'm not
well, and you may be familiar with life has to be hard or challenging to be a valuable life. You know, that's a
well,
that's
absolutely.
A... like God forbid it would be easy.
Is it that a given? Yes, life must be hard.
Life must
easy,
be hard.
Something's
and
wrong
so,
here.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I suggest in the book is that for a time, suspend this belief that it has to be hard because my tribe that I really am speaking to in the book and also my favorite tribe to work with is those of us who really care about something and yet we fret, we're fearful, we burn ourselves out, we say yes when we mean no, we're overachievers. You know, I have a bunch of Asian clients right now who I thought we Americans were good at overachieving. Oh, my God.
Oh, heaven.
They do it for their children's future.
Mm. Yeah.
Add that kind of pressure to them.
Yeah.
And so I took the exact opposite. I want simple and easy. It's like there's only a few steps here. Step one is letting yourself become aware of all the facets of this emotion you frankly would like to leave behind. Don't deny it, but as you were saying, Donna, own it, but don't own it like there's something wrong with you. Own it as This is a capacity that you have as a human being. You also have a capacity for play and fun and joy and satisfaction and openness and bitterness and anger and self-doubt and regret and playfulness, irreverence. We human beings have thousands and thousands of emotions available for us. What step two allows us is to have an influence over the emotion we spend our time in. In order to do that, you need to declare it. You need to say it out loud. You need to write it down. This is where I want to be spending my time. If you can't articulate it, change your posture, change your face, change your breathing pattern, and I will guarantee you a different emotion will arise. The question is, what can you do this afternoon, this evening, tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening, to actually extend it? And it may simply be doing the dishes in this more open, upright posture. Reading your emails, making a cup of tea, preparing a meal in this more open, upright, stable, trusting self. When you notice the fear coming back, if you pay attention, you'll notice you've had to do something with your body, your face, the inside, you know, that little nauseousness that comes up. Your physiology will have to change. It does change with it. But you don't have to stay there. You can go back to being upright. The more upright and open you are, the more open you can be. So anything that you do, driving to and from work or town or anything you do, getting ready in the morning, do it in a body that matches the emotion you want to bring. And overact it a little bit. Overdo it. As I tell some of my clients, get an Academy Award for this new emotion. Fake it till you make it.
Your image, Carol, that you've talked about before is almost like seeing that you're an actor.
Yes.
Is a really rich one. I watched part of the Tony Awards last night, so maybe.
Yes, I did too.
It's kind of like we keep thinking we're one aspect of ourselves.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And lose track of the many roles and parts we're capable of playing, and as though we have to wait for it to be.
Yes. Well, that's the mistake we've made about motivation. You know, they did some studies of motivation, and what they discovered is motivation happens in the moments after you start acting, after you start doing, not before. So no wonder waiting for it to change doesn't change anything.
Yeah.
Initiating just this slight extension of your spine and maybe even a slightly larger extension, lowering your shoulders, opening your heart, and your day will appear differently.
Yeah.
Doing it this afternoon and this evening, and tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon, tomorrow evening, is like playing your scales on a piano. You'll get better at it.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't, as I have tended to do, I'm trying to speak as if I do this less and less, which is actually true. when the fear and dread come again, it may be pointing out something important, like Carla was saying, that you need to pay attention to. Or not. Mm-hmm. If you don't find something valuable, then you're able to shift your posture. Get up out of bed.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting, because when I go to the beach and I do Tai Chi on Saturday and Sunday morning, that's very much upright, open experience. And I cannot be in worry, fret. I can't be in that emotion there at all. It's not possible. And the ideas come there, too. You know what I mean? So it's like, I mean, I have an experience after experience of things just popping up. And I go, wow, that's cool.
Yes, yes.
So it's, you know, at least I have another experience where I know, I'll say this, my brilliance comes out even when I'm not worrying and fretting. It comes out in those other ways.
Yeah.
So at least I have that experience to know that there's more than one way to get at it.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes fretting works too.
Yeah, yeah, I have that experience. Well, one thing I notice is I got to go change my computer setup because, you know, I spend, you know, pretty much most of my day at work, and then in the evenings, like, you know, preparing for stuff is in a, I mean, I can definitely bring upright openness to it, but I'm going to have to, like, raise my computer monitor screen and some of the things around me to make it easier to be upright and open, because right now it's very easy to be more down and contract.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just easier because that's just how the setup is.
Well, and good for you that you notice your posture in the day-to-day habits.
Well, I just noticed it just now, realizing how much time I spend contracted.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. That's why step one awareness is so handy, is because all of a sudden we become very observant as to what generates what type of attitude or feeling, or as I like to call them, the emotions or moods. We are always activating some emotion. What I'm adding to the mix here is a bit of choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bravo.
Totally self-serving. I mean, that's how I invented this stuff is I was, as you both of you know, actually, well aware of being a resentful person, and I wanted to leave her behind in a big way, and that launched my journey here, you know, and that's, geez, decades ago, and it's simple, and as we all know, it's not easy all the time. But trust the simplicity. Maybe that's what I'll leave us with today, is trust the simplicity. If you have questions, and I'm saying this to you guys, honestly, to you guys, and also to those listening to the recording, is email me if you have questions, or buy the book, or join the next free teleclasses on July 9th. You know, put it on your calendar and join us. We'll have some other topic and learn from each other. And or email me, carol@saveyourinnertortoise.com. I'm very, very open and interested in this work, working for myself and for you guys. So if you have questions, have concerns, have ideas, I mean, the book is full of ideas of people I've taken this stuff through. So, you know, check the book out. I feel like a bookseller, but I am. It's like it's part of being coming out for me. Part of what's been fearful for me is coming out in such a big way. It's very safe for me to do it in a teleclass like this, but with a book that people are going to read that I don't know who's reading it, I found I was a bit nervous, but now I have to be bolder and really, really find that group of people who are attracted to my philosophy And if they're not attracted to me, I wish them to find something that they're attracted to.
Yeah.
And I've got tons of books and all that sort of stuff to read. I'm putting out a different energy in the world, and it's one that's far more, we can't control our emotions because by controlling, we often mean I don't want to have those again.
Mm-hmm.
That takes a lot more time and practice. That takes years of practice. But we're already practicing. The new people who are listening to this are being introduced to it, and they're initiating their practicing. I and you two have a bit more practice, and we're practicing. So, yay!
Yeah.
And cool. I notice we're right on time.
Okay.
So, any questions about step one, two, or three that need to be answered before? Anything that you'd like to say to close this for yourself? What's up here? Anything?
I'm just struck with how rich a field of play this is. And
yeah, it is kind of cool.
How easy it is to get that it is, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I always want you guys to start with what you can succeed with.
Yeah.
Simple and easy, change your life. Hard and challenging, change your life. What's your choice? Do you want to work hard at it? Cool. Do you want it to be easier? Cool. Just play. Yeah, thanks. I agree. It's quite the field here.
Thanks, Carol.
You're welcome.
Thank you, dear.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
I'm going to miss you next month because I'll be on a business trip. And
okay. All right.
Be in the middle of the day, so.
Well, I'll record it, and I'm going to make it available on my website. So, yeah, that's one thing I'm initiating is making these available on the website.
Okay.
All right, guys.
Have a lovely week.
Yep, and this afternoon and this evening and tomorrow morning, afternoon and evening, play with this. And call me if you need to. All right, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.